Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
So let's have a look at the business stories that are making this morning's paper. And delighted to be joined by journalist and broadcaster Valerie Cox and also Ronan Reid, Director of Cantor Fitzgerald Services. You're very welcome, both of you, to the programme. Good morning to you both.
Morning.
Good morning, Bobby.
Now, Ronan, we might start with you. It's not the front page, but it's a headline of economic sorts. Economic shocks and geopolitical upheaval are the new norm, according to Pascal Donohue, who addressed a rather salubrious crowd in London earlier in the week.
I'd like to confirm I wasn't there.
Good man.
at the time.
Thank you for that.
And economic shocks and geopolitical upheaval has been happening since about the year 2000. The last 23 years have been upheaval. But he's correct. I mean, this year particularly, more than 50% of the population of the world votes new governments in.
Yeah.
So political upheaval is inevitable, and we're seeing governments polarised right and left everywhere. We saw an assassination, obviously, attempts during the week. So, and we're in a stage of global turmoil. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's that. But also countries are becoming more protectionist. So succession of shocks, but it naturally leads to Pascal telling us that we're okay and he's put the money safely away and everything will be okay.
Yeah, he also reiterated his warning that he was absolutely certain that Ireland's corporate tax bonanza would end in the years ahead. Now, we've been hearing that for a couple of years now.
That's right. I mean, part of it is right. I mean, the tech one is a hard one to figure. But don't forget, there was a big COVID shock to our corporate. A lot of the COVID vaccines were made here. So a lot of the profitability flowed into corporation tax receipts. But tech is a hard one. I mean, tech still is booming. The top seven stocks, on the US index, they're called the Magnificent Seven, are nearly all tech. And they're still booming away in technology. We're on a pretty significant revolution of technology, probably the biggest one we've seen since 2000. So tech, I think it'll be less, but it'll remain positive. They are running into more competition globally. France announced a lot of announcements during the week, pitching Microsoft and other companies.
Yeah, we'll talk about Intel in a second. But just before we leave the story, Valerie, it was quite a high-powered room. The British branch for the Ireland Fund's philanthropic group, but some real players in the audience listening to Pascal's delivery.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you had the former BP chief executive Bernard Looney, Cathal Deasy, he's the global head of investment banking for Barclays, Lang O'Rourke, the chief executive Ray O'Rourke, and Jeremy Masding, he's the former chief executive of Permanent TSB. And Alison Rose, of course, the former NatWest chief executive who oversaw Ulster Bank's withdrawal from Ireland. But I think one point we're missing is this was just a fundraiser. So Pascal wasn't going to go in and say everything's great or nobody would have given him any money.
Yeah.
But the other thing about it is, Mark Paul here is waxing lyrical about the fact that before they got the main course, 117,000 was pledged already. Well, if you divide that up, there were 250 people there. That's only €468 each.
They're miserable, aren't they, Valerie? They're miserable.
I don't know what the final figure was. Miserable.
I think the secret to it is when you looked at the list of people, they were all former. They're all looking for jobs, as I could see. Former CEO.
Spending their money, maybe.
I'm a former CEO. I should have gone. Oh, I missed my opportunity.
Well, we mentioned tech earlier, Ronan. All Eyes, a really good piece by Cliff Taylor, as always. I love his articles, but great analysis on Intel, and what a contributor it has been to Ireland over the last number of decades. But really, really need to watch it now and consider what its next Irish move might be.
Yeah, I think some of this stems from the very simple fact of higher interest rates in America. So the cost of capital is dearer. So Intel is looking for capital partners. So, and originally it did it in the States and now it's doing it in Ireland. This article covers a potential $11 billion that it's going to raise.
Is that interesting in itself?
Yeah, it is.
Kind of cashing out
the
fund expansion or?
Yeah, it's probably looking at what their cost of capital is and other funds will pay them that. And that's Apollo is the rumoured one during the week, was the fund that was talked about. They have done it in the States, so they raised a similar amount. I think the concern here is that in they were going to do it to build a new facility here, but it doesn't look like they are. It looks like it's going to be released into the group. Companies do it to generate a higher return, return more money to shareholders and generate a higher return on their capital, which investors like. But it is concerning, and I would expect, I think that the tangential story, the longer story, it's a very good article, is about we're now competing with much bigger countries.
Yeah.
Like the UK, it doesn't mention the UK as much, but the UK post-Brexit has less restrictions on state investment. France was everywhere Macron about. He entertained the top tech leaders of the world looking for investment. Germany got the last Intel plant over us.
Yeah.
So you're now competing not with the smaller minnows, but with the bigger. And we can't really complain about state aid because we're arguing our tax rate all the time.
Yeah.
Which leaves them pushed into a corner. But it does mean we've got to remain smarter and more nimble. But it would certainly be, I don't think it's a red signal, but it's certainly an amber, green to amber signal, yeah. More competition.
Interesting as well, Valerie, that, you know, Cliff Taylor also cites, you know, the politics in the United States having an influence here. If Trump comes back in, he's going to want the Intels of this world. Yeah. Manufacturing in the States, and that could inadvertently.
Yeah. It could. I mean, Cliff is talking about the fact that we need to consider our own position, where we're positioning ourselves in what's going to be a changed world. And of course, we've always had this very close link with the United States. But I mean, if Trump comes back in, he's definitely going to want everything back in America. Mm. And that's not going to help because, I mean, all of these companies came here in the beginning when the IDA initially got out there and invited them in and courted them and wooed them and gave them. But also these companies now are having problems because we're not making it easy for them. We're having terrible planning issues with several of them, where mostly to do with water and with power. Yeah. And also the housing crisis, of course, doesn't help. So we're not making it easy.
You're right to point that out because they are real worries on the horizon. Particularly now that this has become a much more competitive place.
It's more competitive.
As Ronan said, you know, the big players are now, we were competing originally with other countries in Europe. Now we're competing with the likes of the States.
And the trade blocks are breaking down clearly with geopolitics. Like there was a great article over the weekend in Bloomberg, which was saying the friends of Russia, Saudi, Brazil, China, they've been on it. So you've got two different trade blocks. So the world is becoming more partisan as elections and other things happen. And Ireland is making it more difficult. And as you transition to a wealthier economy, we've become more expensive. So you have to innovate. A lot of that goes back to universities. Innovate, make it easy, as you say, housing, planning, make the process easy.
Whereas we're becoming complacent, maybe.
Yeah. And I think also companies have an expectation that states will invest huge amounts of money. Bigger countries can do it more easily.
Yeah. Well, we have you there, Ronan, as a stocks and equity man. Will you explain this meme stocks to us and what's actually happening here? Because Valerie and myself are a little bit confused.
Yeah, I'd be slightly more cynical on this one this time around. Well, I was last time. I mean, essentially, this all started several years ago where all the big hedge funds were shorting a stock and everybody felt it was mean and unfair. So a number of what they call social media got together to get everybody to buy it up in stocks like GameStop and AMC. But they got it all the way up and it came all the way down.
Yeah.
So while they thought it was a win, they actually lost money at the time. And the individual most heavily behind it, Keith Gill, he's known as Roaring Kitty, which I thought was funny. He put a post back on the social media platform X. And then on the back of that, GameStop surged, AMC surged, that their prices went up. But I think some of that was actually possibly some of the hedge funds that originally they got them short, jumping in ahead, expecting it to happen. There was loads of activity and the stocks come down. Markets are funny in that the first time something impacts, it's a big wave. The second time, it's a little bit of a bubble. And this time it lasted about 2 days.
Am I right in saying that, the analysis here certainly is that the action was born out of lockdown boredom.
Yeah. Yeah, very
no fee brokers and social media chat rooms.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, the thing I couldn't understand is GameStop distributes and sells games in stores.
Yeah.
It was during lockdown. Like, I think if I said to either of my sons, you're buying that game, you're going down to a shop and buying it, like the way we might have bought DVDs or anything else, they'd laugh at me. So it was a very strange one, and it came back to it. I mean, that's something that you would buy online, and people live on PlayStations and other boxes, so I couldn't see it. So this time it was back. It only lasted about 2 or 3 days, so I think it's one of those fads that one sees every now and again.
Keep your hands in your pockets, Valerie. Yeah. let's move to aviation, Valerie. The threat of private business aircraft ban at Dublin Airport appears to be lifted. Some strong words from some international FDIs basically saying, if we can't fly in and out of this airport, we're going to be compelled to halt all new hiring in Ireland and consider phasing out our office.
In some ways, it goes back to the earlier story, doesn't it, about how well we're looking after these multinationals. So there was a threat that business jets flying into the airport were at risk of being banned because of the passenger cap, and that wasn't a good idea. So the points they've been making is, this is the General Aviation Association and the European Business Aviation Association. They want to get through and ensure that the officials who are making these regulations understand the ramifications to the business community. And also, of course, tourism could be badly affected. And, you know, other airports handle this differently. I happened to be in the private jet section in Athens.
What were you doing there?
Well, I was travelling with somebody on an air ambulance. That takes the glamour out of it. But I mean, it's a very big area and you're so well treated. I mean, they know how to look after their executives. They check them in and then you get out of whatever you're travelling in and they put you in a limo and take you to your private jet or your air ambulance, as it might be. And they really look after you, and it's a big area, and you don't wait around at all. There's none of this nonsense of going into the actual airport proper.
And doing,
so, you know, if we can't do that, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. It's crazy.
I did one thing that struck me out of it was, if back years ago when the U.S. auto industry was in trouble, they were all called before the Senate, and they were all saying how tough it was and how much they needed state aid. And I always remember one of the senators saying, can you put your hands up how many of you flew commercial or flew in your own private plane? And all the hands went up. And he said, fix that first. Fly back commercial, guys. I agree with you. Just make transport easier. There are also security concerns that have been seen more and more, particularly on high-end tech people. Like, if you had the days of Steve Jobs came to Ireland when he was running Apple, if you had somebody like that, you also need security aspects to it, and they've all had to beef up security over time. But it's been left outside the cap. I think that the notion of the cap in a country that relies on tourism solved the problem.
That's an island.
Yes, that's an island. We have no ways of
I think the mood music seems to me that it'll have to be sorted.
Oh, yeah.
Because it just can't. The idea of it not being sorted just is too hard to contemplate. Roland, let's stay with aviation. Ryanair set to cap earnings season with a jump in revenues. This could suit Michael O and his bonus, which I think is still somewhat, well, they say he's going to get it. It's only a matter of
The share price went up above the magical, I think it was 20 euros and came back down to 18.60. He probably gets it, and he, like, you know, he's done an unbelievable job running Ryanair. I always think of Ryanair, like the benefit it does to the economy, like the amount of tourists that it brings in over time. Now, tourism numbers are a little bit slightly weaker. I think the issue here is the numbers are better than people expected. They thought they would be weaker because there's a delay on delivery of aircraft. So you have problems on Boeing aircraft. So the ability to get through that has been hard. They've had a couple of online scuffles with travel agents.
I saw it. Yeah.
Voice wouldn't be Michael without a couple of issues.
What do they call them? Scrapers.
But he runs a great company. It's highly profitable. Their numbers are good. Generally, the industry, I think one thing post-lockdown, everybody's gone back to traveling and probably shorter holidays, which is more flights.
Yeah.
People are going away less for long trips and they go away for like city breaks and shorter holidays. So Ryanair numbers are still really, really strong. I think once the aircraft side is done, and I think we've got to rely on tourism. It's funny, you're seeing it in a couple of countries, like in Spain as well, they're advocating against the amount of people coming into Spain now. Local residents saying it's ruining it. So it'll get interesting now as people want to travel more and more.
EVs are in the news again, Valerie.
Yeah.
Eamon Ryan is pressing on with his 2030 EV targets. Despite that, there's a 16% drop in wholly electric vehicles. But he's pushing on regardless.
Yeah. I mean, he wants to have 30% of Ireland's privately owned cars.
That's one in three.
That by 2030. Yeah. And, you know, maybe he's not listening to the mood music. I don't know. But, I mean, I've listened to a lot of people talking about this lately from the motor trade. And, I mean, some people even are afraid to take them as trade-ins. Because, the customers don't want to hand them over because they're being offered so little.
You're looking at somebody who owns one. I'd hate to tell you what I paid for it and what it's worth now.
Are you happy?
Secondly, I also was the victim of a dead battery, believe it or not.
Wow.
That had to be. Well, now this.
There is a grant now, you know that.
Yeah, but I got the grant. But I also didn't know that there are three batteries in an electric car. There's a huge big one, and then there's two smaller ones, both of which had to be replaced in my car at a cost of 800 lids.
Yeah.
Only 2 weeks ago.
You know, if you look at how those batteries are made and the minerals and so on that they need, I mean, you're talking about very expensive things, very, very difficult way to look after the environment. I mean, we're opening up these huge mines to get the minerals for the batteries. Is it lithium?
Yeah.
And I really, they're, if you look at that end of it, maybe the cars aren't as environmentally friendly as you would like them to be. And the charging points are another issue.
Oh, big time. One other point in this article by John Burns in the Irish Examiner was basically, do you see there where Eamon Ryan is basically talking about there's no price. Perceived values are still fluctuating. I don't know where this is going to end, but it's hard to see why, like, how they can still hold that target.
Well,
given
I think what Eamon Ryan is looking at is the fact that when you start bringing out your first prototypes, they're always more expensive because you're looking at the research and everything else going into them. And we see that very much with the Volkswagen-Renault link-up at the moment, the huge costs involved. And what I think he's believing is that, and he's probably right, that that is going to come down over time. And as more people enter the market, as we get more Chinese cars out there, then definitely the prices are going to drop. And I think that's what he's looking forward to.
The point, Ronan, about misinformation. What is the misinformation?
Well, the misinformation. Well, I don't think it's misinformation.
Yeah,
it does come back on only a couple of years since Volkswagen had the huge scandal on diesel and other aspects to it. And the motor industry is pretty effective lobby group, and they do work together. It's interesting. The US put heavy sanctions on China on the importation of electric vehicles, even though they don't import that many because they're expecting to and they think it will grow. I do think that this is one in time that technology solves. Technology, battery technology improves all the time, and it's the size of the batteries that creates these really big cars that have to go in. And also, quite a number of car companies are stopping making petrol cars. Like they've said, they're going to stop making them. So that seems to be the way. There's a kick generally against some of the ESG side. Funds have sold in the US and there's been a migration out of it where people have said, hey, I don't want to be told what to do in part. And I think that gets a bit of a kicker. Like, you know, you have to do this, you should do this. I think people naturally react against it. But I think this is an inevitability. I mean, the other way to look at it is the combustion engine's been around an awful long time. So a new engine coming through of a different form is logical. And it probably ties into the government announced offshore, a lot of big offshore wind farms, deep offshore. That'll be a lot of renewable energy coming in. The best way to use it is of the time is charging at night. Like, you know, so I think this slows it, and it probably reflects the minister as much as the trend.
Yeah. Valerie, Irish high productivity myth has been debunked.
Oh, yes, this is quite interesting.
You might explain this for us.
Well,
because
we're kind of back to the multinationals again here, because we've always thought that we're one of the most productive workforces in the world. But according to the CSO, the Central Statistics Office, we generated €97 worth of value for every hour we worked in 2023. Now, that is very, very high. And it puts us into the 36 strongest list of advanced economies in the world.
But there's
a big but here. There's something fishy about it, right?
Rip out the multinationals, like anything. Rip out the multinationals.
Exactly.
And you get a different figure.
Yeah, I mean, the multinationals, some of them are worth €381 per hour, which is absolutely extraordinary. And of course, it's linked to what they're producing. You know, really expensive, high-end mobile phones, all of that kind of thing. But if we burst that little bubble, the hours worked by domestic workers here between 2017 and 2019 came down to a miserable €28. So it's actually quite frightening because we came last in a group of comparative countries in Europe behind, say, Luxembourg, Denmark, Austria, Sweden. It's pretty bad.
Yeah. So Cantillon and I like the way Cantillon writes because, you know, I think it might be, there's a whole lot of people behind this.
Yeah.
But basically they're saying it, the summary of the piece is another Irish myth debunked.
Yeah, I think it is now. It's the danger of maths as well. A very big number divided by a very small number or a very big number gives you two different results. I also think sometimes the notion that Irish people will be productively significantly different from English people or French or German, we're all the same. We do similar educational courses. Universities are broadly the same. So I'm not as convinced. I do think, and I've always thought since lockdown was an opportunity to change a bit of the educational side. And I wonder, have our universities lost a little bit of pace about how creative people are coming out? Everything we do in education is based on memory. It's not based on creativity.
So
yeah. And productivity is born of creativity in a lot of places. And so I think, yeah, it could be, I must actually go on and look at the numbers afterwards to see what it was. The other side is, once you get out of all the multinationals, does everybody actually declare the right turnover by the right figures?
So
a black economy.
Yeah, you know, you're dead right. We should be skeptical because of the numbers. Yeah. Valerie, I don't know if you travel the M50, but it's just interesting piece in the magazine section of today's Independent about basically life on the M50. It's Kim Bielenberg spends the day with teams who work to keep traffic flowing on Ireland's busiest motorway. And he's talking about crazy commuters, stray swans and rubberneckers.
Yeah.
All part of life on the M50.
Yeah. Kim met up with Ryan Mulroy, who looks after all these things on the M50 and his team. And of course, their big aim is to keep all the traffic flowing. And the issue of rubberneckers, I mean, that really annoyed me because every time there's an incident, you see loads of people queuing up, taking photographs, slowing down, being dangerous. And I was delighted
to see. It's
grim
stuff.
It's absolutely awful. I was delighted to see that a few days ago on the M1 in County Louth, Gardaí actually fined three motorists who were slowing down, rubbernecking and taking videos and actually putting them up on social media, which I think is just a lousy thing to do.
Yeah, big time.
I mean, and a lot of those accidents were fatal as well.
There was one yesterday on the M50.
Yeah, and there was a huge backlog. I mean, it couldn't be helped. They had to preserve the area. But it was taking an average of, I wasn't in it, thank God, but it was taking an average of 3 hours to get from Arklow to Bulls Bridge.
Yeah.
And I was pitying anybody who was in an EV looking for a charging point at that stage, using up all their power.
It's funny, you know, before the M50, we all remember driving over Lamb Doyles and the Dublin Mountain and then what it became. But, you know, as Valerie says there, Ron, how dependent are we on a piece of infrastructure like the M50?
I think the thing, we're hugely dependent. And the original design, I mean, you can talk about things we do well or things we don't. Well, planning is not always our greatest skill set. And when they built, I think from memory, when they built the M50, they modelled us on UK cities.
Yeah.
And typically, UK families have one car per household. And they're a lot older. Whereas if they'd modelled it in Spain, they would have realised they needed up to five or six lanes.
Yeah.
But the M50 needed to be two lanes wider on both sides, and it was the planning aspect. I thought it was fascinating, and I'd go strong on the Valerie. I think it's disgusting when somebody takes a photograph of somebody else's misfortune.
Okay.
I just think it's terrible.
And just the other thing there.
We have to leave it there, Valerie, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Thank you for a great review of the stories, Ronan Reid and Valerie Cox.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.